You're listening to another Woodshop Podcast, the okayest podcast of its type. Your hosts are Daniel Dunlap of Daniel Dunlap Woodworks and Peter Kapar of Bee Trees Workshop. You can find them as well as the podcast on your favorite social media platforms.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to episode 188 of Another Woodshop Podcast, where this week we're joined by a photographer turned self-taught woodworker. When COVID hit, he was given the opportunity to, quote, go full-time by his job, and when life gives him lemons, he took those lemons and he made a small business out of them. Now he's a maker, an educator, a small business owner, and one of the biggest nerds I have ever known. The first 12, First 12 Patrick said no, so please help me welcome PG-13, Patrick Gensel's here.
Hey, hey, that's me. And that was a great intro. You did your research. I appreciate that.
Yeah. You like
lemons. And it was the first time you heard it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You like lemons, and those other 12 Patricks are missing out.
Yeah.
But you know who's not missing out, Dan?
Probably our patrons.
Wow.
Which we all know and love.
You're picking up what I'm putting down.
Bro, we're on the same level. We're vibing.
On another level.
No cap.
No cap.
So we didn't get any new patrons this week, unfortunately, which makes me sad. It makes Max sad, too. I don't know if you can hear him whining.
I see him.
Pretty sad.
But that's okay, because we have a lot of patrons, and we love all of them, and we appreciate all of you. We especially want to give a shout-out to all of our VIP patrons, and they are as follows. Excuse me. Now I had a burp. They are as follows.
That's a weird name.
Charlie Coons of Stubby K Studio, Justin Frazier of Frazier Canyon Woodworks, Jesse McIntyre of Sage Hill Woodcraft, Gillette Woodworks, Victor Aragama, Nick Brim from Nick Brim Woodworking. Very original name there, Nick. Matt Maynard of Patriotic Pines, Bill Burkle of WTB Woodworking, Malcolm at Bossa Nova Woodworks, Justin from Calvary Customs, Patrick Gensel.
I know that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah. Michael Flickinger, Scott Shirk from Red Leg Custom Woodworks, Max and Bindi Coons from Stubby K Studio, and Jacob Miller from A Sweet Shop. Now, before we continue, Patrick, every week I announce our VIP patrons and I announce your name, which we are grateful for. But do you have a business name or is it just Patrick Gensel?
So my...
Because I always like to throw in so-and-so from wherever, if I know.
So my Etsy business is Pine and Print, and my legal entity is Pine and Print. But my whole thing, it's always been a struggle through my life. Do I want to be known as Pine and Print, or am I trying to be a content creator who's Patrick Gensel? So I kind of separated them. And I let people know that that's where I'm selling stuff. But me creating content on Instagram is Patrick Gensel, and me selling stuff.
All
on
right,
Etsy.
I'll just continue what I'm
so
doing.
Keep doing what you're doing.
All right.
That was the that was a long way of saying keep doing what you're doing.
All right. That's all of our VIP patrons. We love all of our patrons. If you want to join the Matt Army, as we lovingly call it, you can go over to patreon.com/anotherwoodshoppodcast. And get joined up over there. You can be a VIP just like Patrick here.
And this is
proof
that if you pay long enough, they ask you to be on the show.
Maybe.
If you want to be on the show, all you have to do is keep staying on that top tier, but also do content.
Yeah. I forgot what I was gonna say, but yeah, go over there. Join the
that's,
Army.
That's
we
my
love
fault.
You a long time.
It's all good. Guys, that's thank it. You for supporting the show. Really appreciate it. And speaking of supporting the show, Patrick Gensel. Hi.
Long time top tier patron.
Yeah.
Long time.
It's been a while.
Yeah. You're not here just because you're a pretty face or you pay us enough. You're
he
here
has been
because...
a top tier patron since October 20th, 2022.
Oh, that's longer than you've been a power bottom. Look at you.
Shit. Yeah. Shit. I've been paying you guys longer than I thought.
He's gonna go home and cancel.
This is Dan's PayPal for shark bucks on GTA all over again. So Patrick, we're all really close. We talk pretty much daily, mm-hmm. and I mean Dan, you and I, all of us. Yes, unfortunately. But for those of our audience that don't know who you are, can you please tell us who the hell do you think you are?
So I am a digital maker. And what I mean by a digital maker, and another term I use to define myself is a digital fabricator. So what I mean,
are you an e-girl?
What?
Are you an e-girl?
I am.
Is that what you mean by digital? Okay.
So I consider myself
a
digital
fabricator. Can you say
ooh woo? Ooh woo. Ooh woo woo. So I consider myself a digital fabricator. So 3D printing, laser cutting, CNC, that's kind of like my bread and butter. The short of how I got to where I am is I've been a maker my whole life. My dad had a wood shop in the house when I was growing up. And then a couple of years ago, I found this whole 3D printing thing and I just was smitten by it. And fast forward a little bit to the beginning of the pandemic and I had a lot of time on my hands. I just started 3D printing more. And then that kind of turned into me buying a Glowforge. And then it's kind of exploded from there. I just got really addicted to this whole making things that I see on my computer screen and turning them into physical objects.
That's awesome. That's great. Yeah, that's why we relate so much to you, or I relate so much to you, because we're kind of in the same camp. It's all,
yep.
I have an idea in my head and I have the tools now to make it happen. Not just to shape it out of wood, but to literally burn it and carve it and melt it away until it's exactly what I want it to be, which is it seems so ridiculous.
It is. It's amazing. It still blows my mind that like I can digitally model something in Fusion 360 and like an hour later it's in my hands. It just makes my head hurt.
Your printer's faster than mine.
We're living in the future, gentlemen.
We are.
It's what year is it?
2024. Yeah.
2024.
I almost said 23.
20 years after 1980.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was 20 years ago.
According to my math. Yeah, that's accurate.
1980 was closer to 2000 than we are to 2000.
That, I don't need you to.
I don't like that.
I don't stop it. No, cancel the episode. Done. I prefer girl math where like we're just forever 20 years away from the 80s.
It would be nice because the 80s.
Is that girl math or is that just.
Whatever. I don't know.
Old person math.
Old person math. Boomer math.
Boomer math. The 80s is my favorite decade, so I wish we were forever in the 80s. But
same.
What are we going to do?
So we something unprecedented happened this week that has never happened before in like the last 6 months. We got like 7 questions for you.
Jeez.
Oh, so, yeah.
So what I'm almost like, Dan, should we just jump into questions and then just like keep going with the interview afterwards?
Yeah, let's jump right into questions and maybe the questions will lead us into the topics that we wanted to talk about.
Because we definitely have a topic we want to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we do.
I have one that I want to rant about and we can talk about it for sure.
Is that the same thing that we talked about?
Yeah, yeah, it's the same. It's the same
thing. Well, I mean, Kayla will forgive you eventually.
It's a rant for me too.
Oh, the other one. Oh.
If you want to hear about that story, go listen to the pre-show. Yeah,
that was a great story. But you got to wait. You got to wait till the end because that's where it happened.
It was technically a story.
Don't give away the.
Don't tell them.
Well, I didn't give a timestamp.
Yeah, that's when we give away the super secret code phrase that will just make you giggle. That's it. The code phrase was a joke, and it'll make you smile.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
but yeah, anyways, let's do questions.
All right, let's do questions. Like, so I guess we have to preface it with.
Go, Black Betty, ram-a-lam.
Because apparently that's our jingle for questions.
I still can't believe that's Dan's voice.
It is.
I know.
Voice of an angel.
Mm-hmm. Voice of a generation, if you will.
In the eyes of Kimani.
Hey, Patrick, welcome to the show. Looking forward to hanging with you at Workbench Con. We're like, what, 5 weeks away? Woo, buddy.
Four.
Anyway, I just had a birthday, which means it's time for my yearly existential crisis, and it just so happens to land on your episode. So, you appeared to be one of the, you know, photographer turned, you know, maker, woodworker, CNC, 3D printing, like many of us, myself included. And I'm just wondering, how did we get here? How did you get here? You know, what was your roadmap that led you into putting down the camera sometimes and picking up a table saw? 'Cause you're probably really strong and can do that. Yeah, just wondering, you know, where do you see yourself going with the things that you make and the content that you create? All right, bye.
What was he listening to in the background?
There was something very, very aggressive in the background.
Something.
It sounded like Big Trouble in Little China to me.
Might have been.
Oh, really? Oh, I thought it was like a soundtrack. It sounded like the soundtrack to Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2.
Maybe that's very specific. Maybe that's what he's listening to.
Well, I love the question of like, how did we get here?
Yeah, that's a great question.
So, Patrick, I mentioned that you were a photographer. Your YouTube channel initially was photography centric.
Yep.
And
really,
like, how did you get here? Oh, Dan, also photography.
Yeah.
Like, how do we get
I'm
here?
I'm telling you, it's like the story as old as time. I have a local photographer buddy who now does woodworking as well.
Dan and I have a very similar trajectory.
Right?
So
Patrick, what was your woodworking journey? I get to ask that BS question again.
So it all started based on my math in the around Valentine's Day 1984. My parents got a little frisky. No, I'm just kidding. Maker journey. So
fast forward.
As a kid, my dad had a wood shop, like I mentioned early on, was always like always a maker, but modern day maker. So in the late 2000s, I started
2000?
2000.
$2,000.
Oh God, Pete, you didn't have to go there.
So
we're still going with it.
So I started as a photographer. That was like my first professional creative pursuit. I have an educational background in video production. So that's why you see whoever has seen my content sometimes has some really unique transitions and whatnot, because I have a background in video editing. So I play a lot with stuff in the video editing space. But after college, I found a liking to photography and found a way to make some money with it. And as Dan knows, that turns into wedding photography. And wedding photography is soul-sucking.
It's lucrative, but it very is soul-draining. Yes.
If you want to make a lot of money and work 90% of the weekends of the year, photography as a wedding photographer is your jam. But if you have a family and you want to do things on the weekend, wedding photography gets old, because you can get really good at it and you can start really dialing in your formula and charging a lot of money. But it gets to the point where, one, the couples get more and more demanding and exhausting, and the less they want to spend, the more demanding and exhausting they get.
Yeah, I never understood that.
Yeah, it doesn't
translates to woodworking.
Yep. Yeah, the VFW reception bride and groom always have more demands than the high-end luxury bride and groom that have their wedding in a freaking museum.
The cheapest wedding I ever did, and it wasn't cheap by most standards, but they wanted the entire raw dump of photos after. I'm like, you can have it, but it's another $800. And they paid it.
Oh, God.
They paid it.
No. I've had that request, and I've told them, you can have them. You know, I'm a businessman, but it's going to cost you another $5,000.
Yeah, I should have did that. But I was.
I mean, those are your that's digital negatives. Exactly. They're your...
That shows you...
That's exactly what they are, digital negatives.
And if the layman sees that, they think you are a terrible photographer, because they don't understand that you can shoot something underexposed and make a beautiful photo out of it.
Yeah.
Yep. So I did that for 5 years. I actually just did my quote unquote last wedding 6 or 8 months ago.
Hey, Dan too.
And it was actually good, because it was a really close friend who knew that I was really giving them I was really extending them an olive branch, because I don't.
My last one was for my brother, and I just gave him the memory card.
Yeah,
I hear your last wedding, like as a photographer, is like your last cigarette. It's better than sex.
Oh yeah, it was amazing.
And you have one like once a year. Just to like re-up.
So I did this last one around the holidays, and I shot for like an hour. I told him it's for a friend. It was a 2-hour commitment. I'm like, $1,000, I'll do it for you. They're like, cool. And then after that like 2-hour period, I just drank, and it was great. but yeah, I photography is a lot of fun. It's more fun now that I'm just doing it just to do it when I want to do it. And so, yeah. So Kamani's question, how did I get to where I am? So started as a photographer, got really interested in 3D printing about 5-6 years ago, got back from a trip with my wife and decided to randomly buy an Ender 3 printer.
And is that kind of when 3D printing started taking off? I mean, when was that? How long has it been?
In my opinion, 3D printing took off about 18 months ago. This was like when the mouth breathers, like Peter and I were really into it. Cause like you had to know what you were doing to make something actually come out of a printer.
Yeah. It became a lot more approachable about 5-6 years ago.
Yeah.
For nerdy people. And now, like,
it's approachable for people like you, Dan.
Any Jill and Jane can.
That's what I want to hear. That's what I want to hear.
Even a Dunlap can do it.
Yeah. So I got into 3D.
Geico, are you listening to this? I got a new commercial idea for you.
So 3D printing started as a hobbyist like 10 years ago, and you had to build your own thing. 5 years ago, when I got into it, you could buy a Chinese 3D printer for $200 and
or check,
and it may or may not have worked, but as people like Peter and I, you could make it work. And I got enamored by this whole being able to make something on my computer screen become a physical object. And 6 months later, that turned into me dropping $3,000 on a Glowforge because I had this idea. So I started an Etsy shop in 2015 to sell my photography. And then I let it go dormant.
Whoa, really?
Yeah. Let it go.
Did you do any selling there?
Very little. I sold like maybe $500 worth of prints. Over a couple year period. But I never closed it down. And the nice thing about Etsy is you can change your shop name. So after I bought this Glow.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You change your shop name. Does that change all your reviews and everything?
No.
Damn it.
I changed my shop name about 6 months ago a year and a half ago when I started an LTD or LLC. I added the LTD to the end of it so that I had that in there. And I was
limited, exclusive.
Yes, very exclusive.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the Ford car from the late 70s, the LTD, Ford LTD.
So you're older than we are, Dan.
So yeah.
You don't remember the Ford LTD? It was a big giant car.
I grew up in Poland. I remember the Volkswagen Bug. And
the Fox, the rabbit.
The Fiat Maluch, which was like a tiny little Fiat thing. Never mind. Go back.
You haven't lived till you rode in a Ford LTD.
I'll live without it. Thank you.
Yeah, I think you're fine. Go on. Sorry,
that's
Patrick.
Right, that's right. So
you got a Glowforge?
Yeah, I got a Glowforge. Yeah. And like I said, I had an Etsy shop for a while since 2015. And I'm like, that's still active. So I came up with this name, Pine Imprint. And the reason behind that name is I was doing 3D printing, but I was also laser cutting stuff out of wood and doing some minor woodworking. So I'm like, I'll marry these two things and see if I can turn it into something.
So you got promoted to a trophy wife back in 2020.
Yeah.
Right? Is that correct?
Yeah. So
from your job?
Yep. So we're almost to that point in my timeline. So got the Glowforge, started, revived my Etsy shop. And then I designed this 3D printed Christmas tree ornament and magnet that looked like the battle menu from like the Final Fantasy games of like the early 2000s. And I posted it on Reddit, not intending to like drum up sales. I'm just like, look at this cool thing I made, Final Fantasy subreddit, and everybody lost their mind over it. Where can I buy this? Where can I buy this? So I posted it in my Etsy shop, and that actually shot my Etsy shop up in the rankings really quick. So then I started adding all my laser cut stuff and my woodworking stuff. And so a lot of you guys really kind of like sowed your oats during COVID as content creators on Instagram. I sowed my oats on Etsy as an Etsy seller. And that's what I did with my time. So you had mentioned I became a trophy wife. So during the beginning of COVID, my wife and I were, I know this is a hot button topic on AWP of saying we were pregnant, but we were pregnant.
Is it though?
Well, I know.
Well, we gave Kamani crap.
You guys gave Kamani
crap. Oh, did we?
Yeah. So
I already forgot.
We were pregnant.
And then Hamilton last week said we were pregnant. I was waiting for one of you guys to call him out on it, but you didn't.
Oh, we respect Hamilton.
Oh, we respect him. Yeah, yeah.
You don't respect Kamani? All right.
Bottom of the barrel, get that guy.
So, yeah, the beginning of COVID, we were like, our son was due to be born May of 2020, and shit hit the fan March of 2020. So
right.
I was at a job that I liked it, but it was getting, the environment was getting weird there.
You liked it, but you could do without it.
I liked it, but I could do without it. And the whole culture was getting weird there. And I said, hey, I've got a kid coming soon. Shit's really weird right now. I want to work from home. And that was a fight. But they let me work from home. And then they ended
your job.
Yes.
Oh.
Reluctantly. But then I was furloughed, which was weird because I was the only IT system admin on site, but they had other people that could handle it. So whatever. I ended up being furloughed. So I was laid off essentially during the pandemic. And then that 6 months later turned to a permanent layoff, which was ended up being one of the best things that could ever happen.
By the way, anyone confused, furlough is just fancy word for you're fired, but like you're still on our docket. Like if we have money, we're going to bring you back.
Exactly. Exactly.
So we're going to put your life on hold while for our benefit.
While we figure stuff out.
It's the most corporate F you ever.
Yeah, that's some bull.
Yeah.
So yeah, I worked for a medium sized company, and I ran their IT infrastructure, but I also did some creative stuff for them as well because they knew what my skill set was. And during that quote unquote furlough, they had found somebody within their team that was able to do the IT stuff that I was doing, and more power to them.
I hope that guy stubbed his toe.
No, he
never healed.
He's a great guy. So I won't. No poo poo on
him. No, screw him. Ingrown toenail. Like
I don't like him.
But it.
Yeah, I don't like him.
But it worked out long term for me because I have always wanted to like do my own thing, but I've always been held back by the steady paycheck.
The steady paycheck is a nice thing.
If I could have pulled this Band-Aid off 10 years ago, because I have never felt so driven in my life than knowing I need to provide for my family or help provide. My wife has a very good job, so there's no shortage of income.
Weird but flex. Does your wife have a smart TV by chance?
She does have a smart TV. But sense.
Stop flexing, Dan.
But yeah, it wasn't a huge financial concern, but it was nice. It's always been nice to have a steady income. But now I've never realized how much drive I have to do something when there is a you got to make it happen.
Your livelihood's on the line.
Exactly, exactly.
It is a little liberating. I feel like I'm only in like the early stages of it. Like I like my job. I'm still at my job, but since we've had Emma, like, you know, retire and come on with the business, it's like we are getting some of that now, and there is definitely a different drive. Like your entire mind, your focus shifts. But I want to go back to like the original question too of like, look at where we are now.
Yeah.
Like Dan used to do photography full time, worked at a furniture factory essentially, and now he's got his own business and he gets to work from home.
Mm-hmm.
He gets to see his kids all the time. Self-employed since 2011.
What you just
out of the year?
What you
he
just
sees
said,
his kids every
what
day.
You just said there about seeing your kids all the time. I have never lived in a world where my child didn't get to have his dad at home all the time.
That's huge.
Huge.
That's huge. Not only because you're saving all that money on childcare.
Well, he still goes to daycare, but because I wouldn't get shit done.
Yeah, forget him. Right. Yeah.
But,
okay, never mind. Take it all back.
But I'm always here because like
well, different age, Dan, yeah, different age group.
That last job, I liked what I was doing, but there was an expectation to be there until the work was done. So if I had a kid now working in that job, there would be nights where I'd be there late potentially. And like I can go if I want to go pick my kid up at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and hang out with him. I can.
It's such a liberating thing, man. It's. I look forward to it eventually down the line where I can like absolutely. We can step away and both of us are like full time in a business, but
it's stressful. It's crazy stressful
super
because
stressful.
Like Patrick said, you don't have that anchor of a known paycheck coming every week or every 2 weeks or every month or whatever it is. You have to hustle and you have to make your own way.
And I mean,
there's nothing guaranteed.
I'm fortunate.
If you quit,
you're done.
I mean, you're just going to sink. So,
and I'm fortunate that I have some freelance clients that are regular payers. Like I do some work for, You guys are Etsy sellers, so you probably are familiar with E-Rank. I do some video work for them. And I have a local finance company that I do some video work to. And those are like the only two things I do that aren't related to making. And the E-Rank thing is tertiarily related to making because it's a product for Etsy sellers. But those are fairly regular income sources.
Right.
But and that's what a lot of people think, don't realize. There are other ways to have a stable income and not have a quote-unquote real job.
Yeah, there are a million ways out there. I mean, it's just a matter of finding your way.
Yep.
Yeah, right on. Well, why don't we keep let's keep flying through the questions, not to like truncate the conversation, but we're going to – all of these are going to touch on everything we've already talked about and then some. So the next question's from Nick Pachi.
Nick. Hey, guys. Nick from The Working Grain. So I got a quick question tonight about Etsy. Obviously, I consider you three to be very successful on Etsy. And I'm curious if there's any overlap in the strategies that you use when posting listings or, you know, creating product descriptions or using tags to see if there's any overlap in those. Obviously, Pete's going to say ABL, always be listing, which, you know, very true. But I'm also curious if there's anything that you know of that's typically overlooked when people create listings. That just helped to drive a little bit more visibility to your product and eventually, you know, people visiting your storefront. Yeah, just looking forward to hearing your guys' response and hope you guys have a great night.
Okay.
Hey, I love Nick Pachi.
Hey-o.
He's a good dude.
Great. Thanks for calling in, Nick.
Great handsome fella.
Well, I mean, so he mentions me with the ABL. It's like, always be listing. That's the thing. Like, you got to stay relevant in a shop. That being said, it's something I preach that I don't do. I don't actually list that often. Oh, Dan,
I mean, I have 100 and something items in my shop now.
You're definitely way more aggressive with it than I am. Patrick does a great job with it. But like always be listing is one of the number one ways you can stay relevant on the shop. So I think why don't we go through and just kind of give our thing of what we do and see what the overlaps are. So mine is
because I'm not sure what the overlaps are.
When I actually get into like, I go through seasons. Like I'll have like 3 months of like, I'll make like 30 products. And I'll just like dump them on, you know, I'll dump some of them on Etsy. Some of them are just like, whatever. I don't think these will do well. But I'm always trying to do something new. And whether it's going to be through Etsy, I'm actually finding a lot more work off of Etsy these days, whether it's wholesale or to people I know or whatever it is or word of mouth. That's one way. You want to just keep being active, keep making new things. The other thing is I don't do like, I'm not heavy on advertising. But what I do is I have been refining all of our listings with updated keywords. Basically, anything you put in a description is a keyword in a way. Mm-hmm. It's searchable. Same thing with your title. Same thing with if you got 10 photos and a video to add in there, you better have 10 photos and a video. Sometimes it's really hard when it's like a file or something. Like how many angles can you show? Mm-hmm. It's really hard to do 10 photos. But you know what? Maybe you can figure something out or get it creative. Do a little video of it panning, whatever. If there's an option on a platform like Etsy or Shopify or whatever, if there's an area to fill it out. That's going to help you grow that page and that listing. It's going to be that much more searchable and that much easier to find and see how it does. Happens in 3 months, change something up. Maybe change the wording. Maybe get some ChatGPT help to write out a longer description. So that's the three things I do, honestly, that's all I do. I'm really bad about like trying new innovative things. Like I find something that works. I want this to be a passive income in a way. And I'm very firm on that. I don't want to have to be constantly working 30 hours a week just to maintain my shop, you know? So Dan.
Etsy is not passive income for me anymore. It's basically my full-time job. It's weird how that works. But I will tell you a few things that I do. I do spend money on the Etsy advertising, the in-house advertising. I spend $16 a day currently, is what I've bumped it up to. And that seems outrageous, but it pays for itself. I'm not saying that's what you should do. I'm not saying that's what everybody should do. I kind of started with a dollar, and I just kind of worked my way up because I was seeing potential. I was seeing growth from every iteration that I've done.
And I think I'm at like $2 a day.
So yeah. Like, so
still have it going.
I haven't seen a downside to doing it yet. So I continue to do it. I also do one of the things I started doing last year was I include this little business card. You can't see this because this is an audio format, but on the video,
go check us out on YouTube.
I'm holding up a little business card that says, thank you for ordering from me. Here's a 10% discount code. And on the back, it has a QR code to directly my shop and my logo. And it says, thank you, and all that other stuff on it. So every order gets one of those. And I see whenever somebody uses that code, I see it. And I'll tell you what, that code has been used a ton. So I'm getting a lot of repeat buyers, which is nice. That's kind of a slow build. Obviously, you need to get initial buyers before you can use that card. But I'm seeing a lot of repeat buyers just because of that. And it's only 10%. So it's nice. I mean, for a big item like one of my $400 tables, you know, that's $40, you know. Yeah, but for an insert, it's like $3 or $4. No big deal. Let's see. What else do I do? Oh, I have been leaning quite a bit on ChatGPT for product descriptions on creative products. What I mean by that is like tables and furniture type stuff or knickknacks. No saw stop inserts, no inserts whatsoever, because I feel like those are technical products. There's nothing creative about those. So I can just put a real concise description there myself. I don't need ChatGPT to do it. But ChatGPT is really good at hitting all the SEO words that you need to hit, especially if you tell it to. AI, and we're going to talk about AI here in a little bit, but AI is only as good as you give it prompts for.
Yeah.
So the more prompts you can give it, the more it can spit out something that's tailored to exactly what you're looking for. So if I'm listing a table, I'm going to give it every little bit of information that I can give it. What it's made of, how tall it is, how I made it, how long it makes, how it looks when the light hits it. I mean, just anything you can think of is good. Yeah. And AI will pump out a really good product description.
Yeah, the more detail you give it, the better in a prompt. The prompts now, are what's important.
Absolutely. But one of the other things that I'm doing is I will take those descriptions that ChatGPT spits out, and I will make sure that they're tailored to exactly what I want, because they're not always perfect. So you need to go through them and either shorten them a little bit or take out some words or change some stuff. And look, I'm going to be honest. I feel like with AI these days, I think we're probably going to start seeing platforms like Etsy and Shopify probably starting to monitor AI influence.
Etsy just added AI, actually.
Or adding it.
They just
did they really?
They just announced it like a day ago that they're adding an AI tool to optimize listings.
Oh, well, I take it back. I was gonna warn people to not be so dependent on AI.
Yeah, I didn't read the full description of it,
but hey,
they're adding a tool that
takes. I'm just saying, be a little wary, maybe.
Oh yeah, that's still a good idea to be wary.
Yeah. I also want to note that, like, we call all this stuff AI now. It's
language models.
A year ago, it's not really
AI, but that's just a shortened version that everybody knows, right?
Yeah, we just called it algorithms back then. Now it's like, oh, it's the algorithm. Like, now it's just AI, whatever.
Whatever. Like, it's just easier to say.
And when we talk about AI later, I'm going to spill my opinion on real AI and whether that's even truly possible.
Yeah.
Let's see. What else have I been doing? I don't know. I don't know. Maybe Patrick will say something that rattles my brain. What do you do for
what
Etsy?
What have you been doing? What's your strategy?
So a lot of the same things. So I do the Etsy ads, and during the holidays, I was up to $85 a day.
Woo!
And I was getting that back fivefold daily. So it paid. I had never had a day where that money was not in the green. And that's a thing people need to experiment with. You can't just go balls to the wall $85 a day out of the gate.
No, work your way up to that.
I've been doing this for 4 years at this point.
Yeah.
During my first holiday, I was afraid to spend $5 a day. And like, they capped me at like $85 a day this year. And I'm like, I want to spend more. And they wouldn't let me. So you got to feel it out. And I think Etsy ads aren't for everyone, but my niche, and it sounds like your niche, it works. So you just got to kind of feel that out. So, and that works for me. In addition to that, one of the things I really like to do is do some searches on the types of things I'm selling and look at what people are using for their thumbnail photo and go, okay, mine's better than that. Or no, I could do better. I'm going to reshoot the photo to make it better than that because I have the technical photography skills to do something better than that. So I'm going to. So like, I will always throw up a listing with whatever I have on my phone with the intent that I know I'm going to research competitors and see how they're photographing it and do it better. But it, to Pete's point, always be listing. It's better to get something up and let it start to get traction, even if the photo is shitty, than not put it up at all and wait till you have the perfect photo. Yep.
I mean, it's a 20-cent investment on Etsy, right? To make a listing.
And if I'm paying for Etsy Plus, so that for the first 20 listings, it's
that pays for itself. It pays for itself.
Same with the ads.
I still don't pay for Etsy Plus.
It's worth it, especially for what you're doing. You get that money back every time.
Yeah.
And you get advanced placement. Allegedly.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, what is it, like 15 a month?
It's 10 bucks.
I mean, it's probably it's 10 bucks like a month, negligible then, for what so, I do.
Yeah, but. And then $5 immediately goes back into your like listing credit.
They give you like 40 listing credits and $5 in ad credits, and I just eat that up in the first day of the month, so it pays for itself.
Yeah.
So the photo thing is important for me. ChatGPT, huge for me. I start every listing. Heck, I start my product research process by going, here's my niche. What might be something that's popular? And then I potentially build products based on that recommendation from a computer. And then using the tools, like I said, I do some work from E-Rank. So I use E-Rank, but I also use their competitors as well. Every tool that I can get my hands on that can give me data to make my decisions on what I'm listening. Because as a solo business owner, you don't want to waste time. So you got to find the data that's going to prove to you that this might sell or this might not sell.
Yeah, that's right on. I use E-Rank as well, which I forgot to mention, but we started using it this year and it makes it a little easier because it at least it guides you what you should be focusing
on.
I'm of the complete opposite mind in that regard because I don't use E-Rank. I don't use any of that stuff.
And you're still succeeding. So just point that out.
I'm of the mind frame that like you throw a noodle at the wall and sees.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
I mean, it's literally 20 cents for a listing on Etsy. I don't know about any other thing.
You can have a dead listing pop off like 6 months later.
And I've had that too.
And really, the only difference between what you're doing and what I'm doing is how you're using your time.
Yeah. Yeah. If, case in point, I made an insert for the Powermatic PM2000 for Pete's saw. When I was at his place in October, it is now mid to late January. I just sold my first one 2 or 3 days ago. Mm-hmm. Sold a second one today.
So that time was worth it. That time was
now it's starting to get traction. What, 4 months later, 3 months later?
Yep. Yeah. So it was worth your time.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to hang out with one of your buddies while you're doing it.
You just never know when it's going to pop off. So
yeah,
I'm like, the hell with it. Put it on there and see what happens.
Oh, yeah. I've had listings that something I randomly made. And I had something that took like a year or two to sell its first item. And then it kept selling.
Well, so we have a question from Mitch Hale from Horndog Maps that is actually right in line with what we're talking about right now. So I'm going to jump into that question for us.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it.
Hey, this is Mitch from Horndog Maps. So my question for you guys this week is about advertising. Now, we all came off of the busy holiday rush, and I don't know about for you guys, but for me, the tap has turned off, and it is now completely dead. So what are some ideas that you guys might have for advertising? Now, I know you do a lot of sales on Etsy and stuff like that. I did not have luck with Etsy, so we'll just skip that one. But what kind of places have you thought about advertising? I've done Facebook Marketplace. That didn't work. I've posted in groups. That used to work, but it doesn't seem to work much anymore. I made a TV commercial, which was all right, but super expensive. And right now I'm working with a company to do actual like Facebook ads from a company that knows what they're doing rather than just some dummy with a laser. So what other ideas have you guys maybe heard of where someone in the woodworking community can or maker community can advertise their product to a consumer who's trying to buy them, not necessarily woodworker to woodworker? Thanks. Bye.
All right. Great, great question, because it's January. We're all in a slow season. It's starting a slow season. Like it's definitely not what it was, Dan, right? Like December.
No, it's definitely not. It's slowed down a little bit, but it's still going. Okay.
Still going. Like this is still, for me, the real slow season is like February, yeah. March. And that's because so one thing I will bring up is what's the next holidays, plural. Yeah. Like, you got, Valentine's Day, you got something else after that. I'm terrible with the holidays.
Easter, Mother's Day, Father's Day.
Arbor Day.
Which so, that's fine if you're just making little knickknacks, but Mitch has, and paddy wax. But Mitch has a very specific item that he makes, which is those maps, right? Mm-hmm. And you can't, I don't know how you can tailor that to a holiday.
Right. I see that's what because he does a very specialized thing and he's not really going to diversify from that because that's what works, and he might be making some other.
Yeah,
stuff
I don't know. I don't mean to speak for Mitch. I'm just,
but
assuming.
If he's just keeping to the maps, I almost want to say like, just pretend you're a teacher. Like you work 10 months out of the year.
Yeah.
Or pretend you have a summer business. That's, like you're landscaping. You're not landscaping in the winter. You're plowing snow. You're doing something else. Sometimes you got to pivot your business around different times of the year, depending on what it is. And like, let's be real. A lot of us can make anywhere from 10% to a third of our business money in the holiday season. I'm talking about October till December, sure. Or October till January, really, because it does overflow. There's tons of people buying like ornaments and random things for the holidays after the holidays. Cause like, oh, get a good deal for next year. So that's what I'll say is like, just because it's a slow time doesn't mean it's a bad time.
Yeah.
Like you have your highs and your lows. Like December was really good. It was better than ever before. In January, like compare it to last year. Are you doing worse or are you doing okay? That being said, there's nothing that I don't do any specific advertising, but there's one specific bit of advertising that I am absolutely atrocious at. I do zero of this. To the point of when people go, like, I tag, when people, like, get one of my products, I tag it in a story and they're like, oh, this is awesome. Like, oh, they didn't know I make this.
Yeah.
I don't advertise my own crap on my own page. Right. I'm terrible at it.
It's shocking how many people don't know that I make, dude, for Etsy.
And, like, with you, at least, you post about, about the inserts and bow ties fairly regularly. I'm like shy about my own stuff. Yeah. I feel like I'm shilling out, and so I don't do it. I post about projects I do, but I don't go like, hey, I made these cool ornaments, or I made this like cool like push stick or whatever, and like it's in my Etsy shop. Like I feel weird about doing that. I'd rather talk about the projects I'm working on, but not like sell it. But then look at TikTok shop. You got people killing it, and all they're doing is like, hey, I made this crazy thing, blah, blah, blah. And you have 50 people in a comment going like, where can I get one?
Mike Hurling is a huge example of that.
Yeah.
And
Michael Hurling, Chance, we've talked about them both. They're killing it. Yeah. I mean, look at even like Brad from Fix This Build That. He started FTBT 3D.
Yeah.
Fix This Build That 3D. And all he does is just
print stay in your lane, like Brad.
Yeah, stay in your lane, Brad. But like a lot of those accounts that like Mihai 3D printing, like there's all these like different accounts that they're just showing off the things they're making. And because people are excited about that, there's so many people just being like, where can I get that?
Yeah.
I want to buy it. Where can I get it?
Well, that happened with Dave with the giant samurai sword. He had so many people asking him to make, he's like, that's not what I do.
It's not what I do. I just make stuff. So pimp your own stuff too. Like that's the thing. And Mitch, you do a good job of it. You advertise it. Like we all know what you do. We do. But like, how can you got to start making content, and how do I differentiate like viral content then away from niche content? Like there's content that we all make for other makers, right? And then there's content we all make that it's like, this is going to be broad. like a lot of people might be interested in this, or it's satisfying, right, or it's cool, or whatever. Like, think about like the audience that video is going to go to, and you want to try to like advertise to that audience as well. You know, and we're both, sometimes we're great at it, sometimes we're terrible at it. We'll post 30 videos and they'll do nothing, and then one will go to the moon. So we really don't know what's going to pop off, but advertise yourself. Instead of paying someone else, do a little work to advertise yourself. And again, I'm not speaking as an expert. I'm speaking as like, I've gotten lucky and it's worked out. Dan? Sorry, I kind of rambled on.
Yeah, you took all my answers, so... I'm going to reiterate a few things.
Yeah, please.
Yes, definitely post content around the stuff that you're making. I mean, that's one of your best forms of advertising. I mean, it's quote-unquote free. And if you're doing it on a regular basis, you know, that's kind of like a slow burn. I mean, that's how you grow your audience. The more eyes you have on your products, the more eyes that are potential buyers. I mean, I don't want to sound like a pompous prick, but like, that's one of the great things about having a large following, you know? That was a slow burn. It was a build, you know, it took years. Yeah. I've been doing Instagram now for 7 years. 7 years I've been doing Daniel Dunlap Woodworks. And
old man.
So, you know, it takes time. It's a slow burn. But that's an advertising base, I feel like. Also, I have dabbled in boosting posts. So, like, if you have a very specific product you're trying to sell. Like, when I first made the push sticks, I boosted the post to... And I boosted it to a very specific audience. That's one of the great things about boosting a post on Facebook or Instagram is you can target certain people, certain groups of people. So I tried to specifically target woodworkers, and I saw a pretty good ROI on that. So I spent like, I want to say like $15 over 30 days, which is chump change. And I sold 10 of those, 10 push sticks, which doesn't sound great. I mean, heck, 10 push sticks at $35 a piece, that's only $350. But that got the ball rolling. That got Etsy to see, hey, that product is selling. I'm going to start showing that to other people. And I know you're not an Etsy person, but maybe that same concept can work for you. Let's see, what else? Pete stole a lot of my answers.
I'm sorry. I went on a rant.
I'm going to have my lawyers contact him. Patrick, do you have anything to add to this?
So, yeah, I don't know exactly what Mitch's whole game is, but it sounds like he has a very seasonal product. And
he makes laser-cut, multidimensional maps of lakes.
Okay.
And
they're super intricate and awesome.
Very intricate with, like, depth lines, different colors. Okay. Like,
so I get so that doesn't sound like it should be a seasonal item, but stuff like that are it's a very giftable item.
Yes, that's why it's seasonal.
So that makes it seasonal. Let's say Mitch has zero interest in being a content creator. If I was that guy, I would put 90% of my eggs in selling those. I guess they're called bathymetric maps. During the holiday season. So I would, in September, I'd be ready to just like spend a shit ton of money on advertising. And we'll say that he said he's not an Etsy guy, but we'll put him in my world of selling on Etsy. So in September, I would start ramping up. I would have a bunch of those products made that don't require personalization. So stuff that I can just ship out as soon as somebody orders it. I'd have that ready, and I would dump a shit ton of ad money into Etsy, anticipating that people are going to be buying these maps. But I would also be doing my research leading into that time to see what people are searching for in regard to the lakes of the country. What you can find this data on Google. What lakes are people searching for? Okay, sounds like Raystown Lake in Pennsylvania is really popular. So I should do some Google ad spend on that. I should create some listings on Etsy that have tags around that lake, because I know that lake's been popular. It's all about research, because if you have a product that it sounds like it's very proven, you just need to connect the dots to get more people to buy it. And I would say, based on what I've seen on Etsy, I wouldn't write Etsy off if I were you. You've had bad luck on Etsy, but I think there is totally a market for what you're selling on Etsy, because I've seen them on Etsy. I've seen the amount of sales these shops have had on Etsy that sell that kind of thing. So keep that. That's something you should keep in mind. I think you got to hit as many marketplaces as you can, in addition to selling locally. Local's tough because you have very limited vat of buyers locally. So you need to expand, and it's a product, it sounds like, that you can ship easily. So I would do your research as to what lakes and what geography is selling and what is popular, and focus on that in your keywords and whatnot, and focus on your holiday season. And then you have a specific set of tools. It sounds like you probably have a laser to do all that. So how can you target the other holidays that might not be popular for this type of item, but how can you use your same tool to make other products? So I have like four or five Etsy shops. None of them are related product wise, but they all hit different times of the year, and it helps diversify the income out of the year. Me and my wife are talking about setting up a specific Etsy shop for birth of child and wedding supplies. And that's something that has like a 6-month season rather than like a 3-month season, like holiday items. So think about how you can use your tools. Think less about advertising and how you can use your tools to spread your reach throughout the year.
Yeah, that's great advice. Cause like you really want to, let's be real. Like we do have high seasons and low seasons. A lot of us don't see steady growth throughout the whole year. And like I follow Mitch pretty regularly. I see him in my stories. I watch his content. Big fan of his, because his whole process for how he gets these depth maps, everything.
Oh, they're
like
crazy.
Brilliant.
Those maps are crazy.
Oh, brilliant work. So Mitch, I'm going to just give you hard advice right now, based on me personally being just a guy with a microphone that's looking at your stuff. You need to get on other platforms. Your main bread and butter are Etsy, and then you have Instagram and Facebook, and then you have your own website, of course, and that does great. But like,
I think the websites, those items would do amazing on TikTok Shop, especially if you're showing the product. Well, I stole your answer. So how does it feel?
Well, I got something else to add, Dan. So suck it.
All right,
Mitch, you have a velvety voice. You have a voiceover voice. I don't have a voiceover.
He does.
I hate my voice.
I hate your voice too.
So. Thank you. I want to read you. I want to listen to you read a book. You know, like
describe that map in detail on an Instagram reel.
Dude, all you have to do, and I'm serious. Like, if you lean into the content part of it, there's people I follow that just describe food in Japan. Mm-hmm. Japan Eat, great account. Like the guy just talks about food, and I will never skip that video. But like Dan talking about bowties, skip. I'll like it, but I'll skip it. I'll like it and save, but it's skip.
He'll like it he feels pity. Obligated.
Yeah, like I'll like whatever, skip.
Pity like.
You would absolutely kill it if you just like every week you pick an area, and you know what? Be selective. Biggest lakes,
do
most,
like
biggest hottest sellers, whatever.
I bet if he doesn't already do it, Crater Lake would slap.
Never heard of it.
No, actually. Do kind of like a Justin Davies thing. Remember when we had Justin Davies on it?
Yes.
Do you follow his content?
Yes.
His content is amazing.
He's working with a piece of wood. He describes the piece of wood and its origins. Area. If you did that with lakes,
it's the four eyes
strategy.
Where
he told the history of the lake
he
while
builds a
you're
table,
making the product.
And he doesn't tell you anything about that process. He just talks BS for
Dude,
40
that would
minutes.
Be some fire
and I watch
content.
The whole thing.
I would watch the crap out of that.
I just watched Justin Davies talk about sawdust that he put into bread.
Into bread,
dude,
yeah.
And I watched the whole thing. I watched I stopped. I'm like, was that a reel? And I'm like, no, that was 5 minutes long. And I watched
Mitch,
the whole thing.
You would absolutely kill it. And like, and here's the thing. I love fishing content. I love fishing. Yeah. That's one of my relaxing things.
I never would.
Oh, we're going.
Oh, I love
fishing. We're going fishing. I didn't know that.
That's right. You do have a canoe, and I forgot all about that.
Yeah,
we're going fishing.
But Mitch. Keep that off your Instagram stories. That's just a suggestion. It's just, I'm like, if you want to start selling on Instagram, selling on TikTok Shop. Instagram Shop is like fine. TikTok Shop is on fire. Yeah. They also subsidize it. And like, no, obviously it's lakes, it's fishing. So like, it seems like it's relatable. It actually sometimes feels like it's like a whole different thing.
That's viral content right there.
What, you fishing just do, or?
No, voiceover of the history of the lake while you're processing the lake.
While
map.
You're making depth it, profile, cutting it, like, spring.
Oh, we finally hit the bottom depth, which is 1,900 feet or whatever it is.
Layer 4 yeah. or layer 6 or whatever it is.
That yeah, that's banger content.
I would watch 100%. I would watch the absolute out of that, man. Like, it would be great. It would be amazing. See, I'm a polite boy.
All right.
I censor myself. But Mitch, big fans of your work. You're doing everything right. I mean, first of all, he's trying stuff that we're not trying. He had a damn commercial made TV.
What is
smart TVs?
He's trying to hit the trying to hit the boomer audience.
Yeah. What's his Instagram?
I got a smart TV. I don't watch commercials.
Horn Dog Maps. Everybody go check out Mitch. Horn Dog Maps. This guy should be at like 100K.
I'm adding him now.
Dude, just keep
love those kind of maps.
Honestly, stop. And again, this is just my like opinion of we're talking right now. Stop even posting like shop content. Talk about the maps.
Yeah,
talk about each lake. Talk about like the history and like how you like what your process is like and what you do. People eat that stuff up. It's like micro documentaries. They're 60-second documentaries, and that's what makes TikTok so addicting. And I know everyone hates TikTok, and it's always whatever. I'm a better person because of TikTok. Yeah, there's plenty of garbage.
I get sucked into those little mini documentaries too.
I learn so much.
And I'll find myself like going to the page and going to the next part.
Yes. And you're
because I'm like so invested in like this 3-minute story that I want to hear more things.
And Mitch, again, back to your voice.
Hey, this is Mitch from Horn Dog.
See how deep that is? Oh, yeah, that's a win. Read me an audiobook, Daddy. Yes.
Okay. This is getting weird.
And I just want to circle back around to, I just looked at his stuff, and I don't know how I didn't see it before, but that shit would sell on Etsy. I think you just need to give it another chance.
Yeah.
Etsy's tough. Etsy's tough. There's a lot of people
can be tough.
Who sell beautiful things. A lot of us got lucky. I got lucky. But I got lucky. You can be persistent. You do the research. You find the keywords. The maps I'm seeing here are better than 90% of the maps I've seen. And people sell lots of maps like that on Etsy. You just got to sell them better.
You know, the issue for Mitch is, and I've talked to him about this, he's got hundreds, if not 1,000+ listings of all the different sizes.
It gets expensive.
Like, he needs complicated to manage.
He needs to compact those into variations of the same map instead of having multiple listings. Multiple listings is great to a point until it gets unwieldy and expensive.
All right, we're going off the rails. This is great though. And Mitch, you're going to get a lot more info. Or obviously you heard it earlier in the podcast. We were talking about that stuff too. But next, let's jump in. We have a question from Malcolm.
Malcolm?
What up, guys? It's Brayden.
No, that's Brayden. I'm sorry.
I have a question for Patrick, a.k.a. P-Unit, a.k.a. the G-Man, a.k.a. the Genzelator, a.k.a. Neil Patrick Harris, a.k.a. the Pennsylvania Butcher, a.k.a. the Baker, a.k.a. the Candlestick Maker, a.k.a. the WBCG. You're a very technical maker. You do a lot of 3D modeling, a lot of tinkering, very mechanical mind. What I'd like to know is, what would you consider to be the most complex project that you've ever put together? Have a good night, guys, and a good show. See you at WBC.
Ayo.
Sorry about that. So that's from Brayden, and I named two files Malcolm by accident. So, Patrick, what is your most technical build that you've done to date?
I'm trying to think about this now. All right, so I never completed it. But before I bought my CNC, I started building the mostly printed CNC where you print all the parts and it uses conduit.
Wait, what? You 3D printed a CNC?
So you 3D you 3D print all the plastic parts and it uses EMT conduit as the rails and it uses ball bearings and there's
The square conduit?
Yeah, the round conduit. The stuff that Lee uses.
The flimsy stuff?
No, the metal round conduit.
I mean, that's still pretty flimsy.
It is, but this is like a 2x2 CNC instead of a...
Okay.
Back in the day, Dan.
I thought you were talking about that square tubing. That would make more sense.
That would work probably. But yeah, I got 90% done with that project, and it was a lot of math and stuff. And then I bought a CNC. So technically, that was the most complex thing I've ever done. I wish I had a better answer, but
no, I feel like I don't. I was thinking even for myself. I know he didn't ask me, but I was like, I haven't made anything like so crazy that like.
It has to be a thing. I have stuff that I want to make that's crazy, but yeah, most of the stuff I do is maybe complex, but I have a pretty good gather of how I want to make it happen, so it doesn't seem complex to me. But I mean, it's all relevant. So like, what we do as digital makers is crazy to like most normal people, quote unquote normal. So
normies. All right, let's get into the question from Malcolm then. Finally, this time.
Hey guys, it's Malcolm from Boston Nova Woodworks, and I just want to say hello to Patrick. It's great to see you on the show as a guest. I can't believe they had Braden on before you, but you know, hey, maybe they were just
Braden on before Malcolm.
That time, or they were super desperate. I don't know. Maybe you were busy. Anyway, my question this week is about automation in the shop. I'm trying to determine between a CNC, a laser, or a 3D printer. So for an entry-level user like myself, taking into account the cost and the learning curve, I'm trying to figure out which might give me the fastest return on investment. Eventually, I'm going to own all three. But just where do I start? Maybe there's not an easy answer, but I'd like to hear your thoughts on the topic. Okay, thanks.
Patrick?
My answer is 100% without question, a laser.
Oh, what?
And the reason, a CNC is a close second. The reason I say laser is because one, footprint can be smaller. Mess is less. And material cost is lower. So you can buy a bunch of files.
I'll give that to you.
You can buy a bunch of files on Etsy for eighth inch knickknacks and stuff.
Paddy wax.
Like, for example, this Nintendo sign I made today it's all eighth inch material. And
that's misspelled.
Yes, it is. No, it's not. The reason I say laser is you can get a lot of files for things that are desirable to people on places like Etsy. That you can make with a simple low wattage X tool if you want. You don't need a crazy big thunder laser like I have. You can do it with.
Why are you attacking me right now, bro?
Because you're a prime example of a machine that I think works for a lot of people with a small amount of space and wants to make something. So you can do engravings, you can do cuts. And if you're staying within like that eighth inch thick material, like, Dan, you've proven you can do much thicker than eighth inch.
Yeah, I cut 3/8 inch hardwood.
But that's not not practical on your machine for
production. No, it's
for
not production. Practical, but it can do it.
But you, for practicality's sake, you could do eighth inch material on your machine, no problem. You find some good files of things like, I'm trying to think, like signs. Signs are a good example.
Everywhere sign.
Everywhere sign. I do a lot of like laser cut box jointed holders for different things. I have them on this wall over here where I can just like throw business cards in them. So there's a lot of files on Etsy you can buy geared towards eighth inch or quarter inch material that you can just churn out on a laser. See, Peter probably will agree with this. 3D printing is more, you got to be able to design the thing yourself because most people who design models for 3D printing are not willing to just fork over the rights to sell those things unless you're willing to pay a lot of money. Am I right in that guesstimation?
So I first of all, you're wrong on everything you said. Second of all, I also would say laser is the first thing that I would.
Oh, what the hell?
So here's the thing. I got a lot of crap because like I got into the whole like mechanical employee, three axis machine, whatever, like world with a CNC. And everyone knew me as the CNC guy for a while with my Shapeoko. And then I got the 3D printer and then I got the laser. And then I was like, I'm a laser guy now because It's so quick. It's so clean. It's so quiet in comparison to quiet. Season C.
It is quiet. If you want to work really, after hours and not bother the rest of your family.
It's just so nice, especially when you get like a more powerful machine. Because like, I'm not talking diode. Diode, no. Different list.
Yeah. It's actually a separate
Again, with the attacks over here.
We're talking a 50 watt plus, not even a 40 watt, a 50 watt plus machine. If you got a, most of the newer ones are like 60 watt, 100 watt, and then I have the 130 watt, which is like a smart TV equivalent of a laser. It's great. So like that I would say is the
most approachable. You bastard, I muted my mic so I could cough and then you drop.
That is the most, I feel like, approachable for woodworkers and people that think like in CNC terms or like flat stock like woodworkers. If you're a nerdy modeling 3D design person, whether you know how to make the design or you don't, then I say 3D printer is the quickest you can monetize. Also, it's a way lower cost of entry, especially nowadays. But even let's talk a year and a half ago, you can get a right behind me. If you're watching a video on youtube.com/AnotherWoodshopPodcast, I have a Prusa Mini.
Well done.
A $350 ornament that literally sits on my shelf there. I used to use it for prototyping all the time, and I just haven't used it as much because I just send it to my Bamboo now. But I still have it. I'm not going to get rid of that thing. It's great. Bamboo's it's a great printer.
Behind me.
And even back then, and even now, it's still a great machine you can use.
You have ink printer right there.
Yeah, that's a 2D printer.
It's a 2D printer.
So the cost of entry for 3D printing is a lot lower.
Yes,
you can recover that cost a lot faster.
It was $100.
But you have to have some kind of knowledge of that. Yeah. And I will also say 3D printing is a lot more open about their files than CNC and lasers, especially CNC. People do not like sharing files in a CNC world. Even way less than 3D printing.
Not if you're making proprietary like items and
laser, much easier to create a product. 3D printer, much more open. And if you're, Peter's right though, if you're willing to go spend some money on a Patreon account that is giving, selling files that you can resell, a $300 or $400 Bamboo A1 and like $40 a month worth of Patreon accounts might be able to flip that pretty quick.
Plus filament. Yeah.
Plus
filament. But you got to know a little bit to maintain that machine. That's the thing. That being said, a CNC can absolutely earn you the money. It is just the highest cost of entry. That's all I'm going to say.
And the loudest and the most dust. And the biggest footprint, in my opinion, because of dust collection.
Okay.
So, Dan, tell us why you're wrong now. Go.
Well, I don't 3D print. I only just started the lasering stuff, the lasering things.
That's me.
It's kind of funny that.
So obviously my answer is CNC because I've
CNC woodworker shirt.
I've done pretty good with the CNC.
It just has my logo on it.
The thing with the CNC though is you can make bigger, more robust items.
Absolutely.
Right. Those C tables I make those. I mean, they're huge. They're like 20 pounds.
Yeah.
You don't have to use a CNC to make those, by the way. I just do now because I can. But you can make bigger pieces of furniture, more intricate. But here's the thing. With any three of these machines, and I can confidently say this about 3D printers too, even though I don't own one. When you get efficient at making your own files, you can turn around and start selling those files to people because
love that concept.
You're going to have a lot of other people in your shoes, and they want to use the machine, but they don't want to spend the time to make the files. I need to practice what I preach because I have hundreds of files that I could probably sell. I'm just sitting on a mountain of money, but there's a huge market out there for SVG files and DXF files and STL files. So there's another source of income whenever you get that machine because you can create the file, you can output the file on whatever machine you have, and then once you know it works, you can list the file for sale, and that is evergreen, or that is what it,
passive
what
income.
Is that passive? That's passive income.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'll have to upload it once, and make theoretically, money. You don't need to do anything else after that if you have good instructions.
So one type of these machines that was not mentioned in the question or by any of our answers, there's someone out there making triple our income, probably combined, with a handful of crickets.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I have a cricket downstairs. I haven't touched that.
That's
thing.
The thing. Like, that's so another that thing.
Since they sent it to me.
Which just leads me to say, it all depends on what you want to lean into. And honestly, I say Dan is ahead of where Pat and Patrick and I are because our attention is split. I don't have time to run my CNC because I have all my laser cut stuff that I just ran for a job there. And then I also have to split a couple hours down in a print shop because I'm printing stuff. We're splitting our attention. If you're focused on a machine,
you can make
you're
going to
make a
money.
Killing. Yep. You can make a killing. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, and
I mean, I'm not rich by any means, but
dude, you're killing it, Dan. Dan is literally living the modern American dream. No offense to me and Patrick, but like, dude, you work from home, you're there with your family. We talked about this earlier, and you work from your garage when you feel like it, but when you feel okay.
Oh, I'm not out there killing myself. I'm gonna be straight up. I don't go balls.
And you're there for your family. You had a good time. You know, yeah, you might work more than 40 hours, but then there's weeks you work less than 40 hours. But you know what? It averages out to
and
everybody
I can
eats
choose
meat.
What time I go out there.
That's that's kind of the life I'm living too as well. It's nice. Another thing that we didn't even mention, if you can come up with a unique way to create a product with any of these machines, like I don't know if any of you guys have seen David Pasciuto's most recent video with his X tool. He created a full piece of furniture with laser.
He's one of my favorite creators. Yeah,
he is.
That table he made was pretty outside the box, and I loved it.
And he inspired me. I'm actually one of my first YouTube videos back to doing YouTube is going to be creating a shop stool only using my laser because I need one. And
ooh, that'd be cool.
That's true. I was saying you could use the CNC to make a big.
As long as you're willing to laminate stuff, you can do the same thing with a laser.
I mean, he put a lot of work into it, but he did it. He did it.
But yeah, I'm with the Thunder. I'm going to do a shop stool for my shop, and I'm going to use the laser to cut all the pieces, laminate it. I'm going to cut leather to be able to stretch around the top and staple it, and it's all going to be laser cut.
Very cool. Yep. Yeah, there's any one of these machines can do a good job. That's the thing. It's all.
I think you're going to be happy no matter which direction you go.
It's going to be fun regardless, and if he makes some money, that's a great bonus.
But obviously, you should start with the
laser first. Yeah. Yep, laser.
3D printer, because nobody else said that.
Oh, I'm cricket. I did say like a 3D printer is the best one.
But just now, Dan said CNC, you said laser, so I had to say 3D printer.
A 2D printer, just like a nice Epson.
Just get a Cricut. Just get a Cricut.
Yeah, that's an Epson.
Just get a Cricut.
Get a Cricut. I'll sell you a Cricut.
Oh, brother.
I got a nice Cricut with all the fixings.
I get all my printer recommendations from Hulk Hogan.
Oh, yeah.
Brother.
Oh, God.
See, it's a smart that was joke. Speaking of smart.
I didn't pick up on that joke either until after.
It took me a second.
Yeah.
You're younger than we are. All right. Anyways, next one's from Randy.
Randy, boy, Randy.
Hey, guys. This is Randy Duterry. That's 1, 2, 3. Duterry. I'm up here in the very expensive Connecticut. I'm sure Pete might know how expensive it is to live in this state. I know he lives in Jersey, but he's kind of close. So anyways, I love the podcast. I'm currently on episode 42, starting right from the beginning.
Gets better.
I have a question because I'm very green to woodworking and looking to get into it as a hobby and hopefully a business. I'm looking to purchase clamps to just start. Am I better off going with the Walmart clamps, Harbor Freight clamps, Irwin clamps, or get the Bessie pipe clamps and just go buy a black pipe for it? Can't wait to hear your response. You guys are doing a great job. Bye.
I was trying to figure out if the background music in his question was the theme from Friends.
I wasn't listening.
I don't know. I was listening. I'm like, what is that song? I know it.
I don't know the Friends theme. Anyway. Well,
clamps.
Damn. I would
Why
say
did you start?
Well, 100% Harbor Freight. I mean, that
what
the Harbor Freight clamps I think are the single best value in the whole woodworking world.
You take that back.
It is not. I'm not. No, that's accurate. And you
I would mostly agree, but Have you looked at
the I don't know anything about the Walmart clamps, to be honest with you.
Have you looked at the price, though, of black iron pipe on Amazon? It is stupid cheap. If you get some Bessie heads and screw them onto the cheap black iron clamp, black iron pipe, you might have some, might have a pretty cheap set of longer clamps.
Well, I'm also taking into consideration that Randy said he's new to woodworking. So that tells me he's probably not making huge products or items
yet. That's fair. So yeah.
So start off with some good F clamps from Harbor Freight. I mean,
maybe
last time I was there, the 6-inch ones were $5.99 a piece. I feel like that's pretty close.
Maybe.
I mean, that's as cheap as they come for clamps.
Maybe grab some of the Irwin 6-inch squeeze clamps. They're nice to have for smalls.
Yeah. Well, and also, whenever I go to Home Depot, whenever I went to Home Depot, I would get some of their spring clamps, those little hand spring clamps.
Yeah, those are
because
great.
They would have them in the aisles, and when I was buying them, they were like 99 cents a piece. And those things have a lot of gripping power, and they're great for like if you're doing a little panel and you got misaligned ends, you can grab them put them on the ends, and it would clip them together.
Lowe's.
I don't know what price they are now. Excuse me, I'm hiccuping.
Lowe's sells a box of pony spring clamps, like in like five different sizes, like $25. It's a great value. I've bought two of those boxes in the last like year or two, and they're the spring clamps like you're talking about. And they're great for like keeping even like half inch material together.
Mm-hmm. Or I would use them on my drill press table.
Yeah.
To make a temporary fence or something.
Yep. Lot of uses for stuff like that.
So, have any recs? Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Patrick.
I was just going to say, I think it's a mix of those things. I would say the Bessie thing is probably not necessary at all in the early stages. I have no experience with Walmart stuff. I have a lot of experience with the Harbor Freight stuff, and they are great for the price.
I think anything from Harbor Freight that doesn't have a motor
is. Yeah, it's solid.
That's my rule of thumb.
Yeah.
Yes. And yes. I think that's a lot of people's rule of thumb.
But I'm kind of leaning towards like I might try some stuff with motors now.
It's good. And, or if you don't need it to be precise, like a square or something.
And if you only need it to be a gas-powered motor, their gas-powered motors are actually pretty solid if it's only a motor.
Oh. Yeah, that's a good actually.
Like
good
a go-kart
point.
Or something?
Like, yeah, motor? The Predator. Fine. The Predator motors from Harbor Freight are awesome.
Motor attached to a saw? Forget it.
Yeah.
Also, I don't want a gas-powered table saw.
Yeah.
No. Well, I don't know.
So
I bet you they use those over across the pond, I bet.
I bet.
So, Randy, I have a bunch of fancy Bessie clamps now at this point. I feel I made it. That's how it feels, right? You've made it as a woodworker. You have Bessie clamps.
When you have a matching clamp wall.
I have red on the wall,
just looks pretty.
I'm a big-time woodworker, right?
Red on the wall, you got it all.
Yours, you said you're starting out. I bet you're going to make a lot of cutting boards and some smaller stock. Guess what? When it's cutting board season in my shop, I have one set of Bessie pipe clamps, 3/4-inch pipes, black pipe screwed on with the whatever. You got to put tape over it, by the way, because it's going to, the glue and black pipe, it just oxidizes weird.
Yeah,
and it's real bad. So you're going to have to pre-tape it. So pre-tape it with some painter's tape. What I do is I lay out my work, I clamp it down with the pipe clamps because I know those are dead nuts flat, as we've said in the past.
There's very little flex with those things, which is nice.
Dead nuts flat. And then what I do is I let it sit there for a bit. Then I throw the other clamps over the top, bottom, sides, whatever, level it out. And I use the pipe as the reference. If there's any air in there, if they start moving on me, I know they're off. But I use those as my basically dead flat table. And then I loosen those, take them out. Clean off any residue glue, and I start the next glue up while everything else is sitting because it's already curing. But 5-10 minutes, it starts getting nice and tacky. It's not moving on you. Get it out of the way. One of the best sleeper clamps that you can get that not a lot of people talk about. They're at Harbor Freight. They're silver, like almost like C channel or U channel.
All those aluminum things.
Yeah, that have like depressed little like latches in it.
Uh-huh.
I taught at a woodworking school. Yes, with the blue heads. I taught at a woodworking school. We use those all the time. They are like ridiculously good for the money. They're not the best ones out there, not by any means, but for the money, they're incredible.
You just don't want to over-torque them. They're good.
No, if you over-torque them, they'll twist.
You don't have to over-torque anything. Watch Suman's video on torquing or your clamp joints or whatever.
Since we're having a little Harbor Freight Love Fest, you know they carry parallel clamps now? I think they're called
Brennan's. They do. Brennan's. That was my next recommendation.
Yeah.
Wood Whisperer, Mark Spagnuolo did a video on this. He literally compared all of the nice parallel clamps.
Yeah, there were a few people who've done that. He's one of them, I remember. Yeah. I'll try to think of it.
So go check out that video. But there is no shame. But the only thing I will say is get one set of very fine reference clamps. And what I mean is I had a set of earring clamps, the pipe clamps. The feet are cast, so they're not perfect. Mm-hmm. So sometimes my boards would literally like come out of the glue up cocked. But the Bessie ones are dead nuts flat. And if you want to invest in one set of parallel clamps, 24 inches, for your glue ups as a reference, you're going to be good. And make sure whatever you're gluing up on is as flat as it can be.
Those Revo K bodies are amazing for parallel clamps.
Yeah, exactly. Those are great.
731 Woodworks also did a great review video on the Harbor Freight versus Bessie versus Jet parallel clamps.
A set of parallel clamps is good, but pipe clamps are rock solid. Do not go with half inch, 3/4 inch.
I know several full time woodworkers. They've been making their living woodworking for years, if not decades, and they use nothing but pipe clamps. They don't have any parallel clamps in their shops.
Mm-hmm. Really fine.
Because also, if you're making giant tabletops, those are the best.
Cool thing with pipe clamps too is because you can swing the heads around. If you have a really wide glue up, you can literally take two of them, anchor them on both sides, and then like the two faces that you crank down, you can actually tilt at a 45 and then latch them onto each other.
Yep.
Yeah, I've glued up tabletops like that.
Yeah.
Frankly, I think parallel clamps are overhyped. I think pipe clamps are better.
I think a set of nice reference clamps is good. So that's where the parallel clamps really do well, because they're fairly rigid, at least from a good company. But you really don't need to have a whole line of them.
No.
That's what I'm going to focus on. Good question.
I have four 24-inch parallel clamps, and I feel like that's all I need right now.
Yeah. Oh, and some of them will have like weird names, like K-Body Junior.
Yeah.
There's nothing junior about it. It's a big clamp. I don't know why they call it a junior.
It's a marketing thing.
Yeah, it's silly. But all right, last question, and this is a good one. Dan, take a nap. This one's from Jake the Vance.
Hey guys, Jake Vance here. I wanted to talk about something other than woodworking today on the Woodworking Podcast. I know at least two of you on the podcast right this moment are secret nerds. And I don't know, maybe Dan gets up to some serious LARPing on the weekends. I don't know his life. But I wanted each of you to tell me about some of your favorite nerd shit that you get up to when you're not busy woodworking.
I'm a furry.
Thanks.
Wait, Dan, it's so funny you say that because I have a chat with Jake.
Oh, no.
Because I work with Jake and then another coworker of mine. And I was like, Jake, great question for the podcast. It's going to be perfect because Patrick's on. And I'm like, I can finally share my secret, which is the furry convention. And then like they respond and then I go, not that I go to one, I started one, the furry convention, the major one. And they just start laughing. Like you never know what people are doing behind closed doors.
Oh, absolutely.
So Patrick, what is your embarrassing, crazy, nerdy, whatever thing that you do behind closed doors that might not be embarrassing, but you just don't share openly?
Well, I'm a 39-year-old man, who's a dad, so nothing embarrasses me anymore, but nerd shit I'm in. Nerd shit I'm into. I have like 2,000 Magic the Gathering cards.
Oh my God.
Yes! Yes!
And I still play it because my neighbor who was in the pre-show before plays and we have a good old time, drink beer and play Magic. Up until about 2 months ago, I spent the last 5 years playing Dungeons & Dragons, different campaigns, and this holiday season was busy, so I couldn't commit to another campaign until later this year. So I was doing that. I also have 300 hours logged into No Man's Sky, which is a spacefaring video game. I play my Nintendo Switch a shit ton, and I haven't spent enough time in it, but I've been playing Baldur's Gate 3 as well. So lots of nerdy stuff.
Dan, so you were called out for possibly LARPing or something else. Like,
I don't LARP. Well, that's live action role playing, right?
Yes,
live action role play, like paintball or you know.
Well, everybody knows I'm a GTA nerd, right? I've been playing GTA since GTA 5.
That totally counts.
That totally counts.
When did it release? In 2015, 2014?
It's been around for a while.
Almost 10 years, if not 10. So I've been playing that since release. And I've been playing online, and I still play. I played an hour and a half tonight before we got on the podcast, because that's kind of how I wind down. Mm-hmm. And
you probably have well over 1,000 hours into that game. I wish easy. I'm sure you can check the metrics.
I can, and I'm. My kids have asked me to look, and I'm afraid to. I'm going to be honest.
Daddy's scared.
I don't want to. I'll bet it's well over 1,000. I'll bet it's closer to 2, maybe even 3. It's sad. Because there was a time before I was full-time woodworking where my winters were, like, I was Mitch. I had a massive down season because I was a wedding photographer in Omaha, Nebraska.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
And in the winters, nobody gets married. Most people don't anyways. I had a few here and there, but, like, my busy season was from April to October, and I had, you know, all the months in between off, so I would play GTA, you know.
Months.
Yeah, I'm like a level, I'm near level 700, which is ridiculous if you know anything about that game.
That seems like higher than most people.
It's sad.
But anything else you're into?
Actually, like, yes. Let's Patrick expand kind it. Of... Patrick kind of made me realize that I'm kind of into – I get enamored by all things, the universe, the cosmos, stuff like that. I watch those documentaries.
Oh, yeah. Let's go.
We're going to have to nerd out offline about that stuff.
I can talk for hours about, you know, just the –
potential for
the universe, the potential for life, you know, all those things. Actually,
how am I just learning this about you?
Yeah,
my daughter,
I had no idea. I love it.
Last week or the week before, she came home from school. She's a freshman in high school now. She came home from school with a question. Can't remember exactly what the question was, but it sparked a whole conversation. And we talked like the whole evening. It was really awesome.
I don't want to wish my kid's life away, but I can't wait for those kind of conversations with my son.
Oh, man. It was really fun. I nerd out on cosmos stuff.
Yeah,
I really, really like it. I'm not a theoretical physicist or anything like that.
No, but it's still fun to talk about. Yeah.
Yeah. It boggles the mind how
string theory and wormholes
how, yeah we
and
can't
all that
even
shit.
Perceive how big the universe is, like,
or
it's
even like
unperceptible,
the mechanics that we can't even like think about potentially
yeah when
existing
you, yeah and if you get into string theory and universes being
quantum mechanics and
universes yeah. being infinite
yeah.
there our universe is infinite and then there are infinite universes
yep.
like that is wild
yeah,
to think about.
It's crazy. Like
it's mind bending.
We can't wrap our head around what's going on.
And I do all this, and I don't partake in any of the organic.
And if you ever did, it just makes it even wilder.
So, anyway, I guess that's my big nerdy thing. There
that's
you go.
Very cool.
Wow, you nerd.
Right. Whatever.
Also, ditto.
Yeah. When I was in high school, I used to nerd out on like Egyptian and ancient Roman documentaries too.
And I think that's kind of entangled with like the cosmos.
Yeah, it kind of is.
I grew up watching one of my favorite shows now, which is something that got me into science, technology, and space, was Stargate SG-1.
I never got into Stargate I did. And Star
you know,
Wars
I know it was all
and Star Trek. I never could get into that.
Like
the original Stargate movie is in my top 10.
Yeah.
It
literally is what got me excited about science.
Yeah.
Which then led real me to actually follow this. I wouldn't be CNCing and 3D printing now if it wasn't for that stupid show.
I like things that are verified by science and stuff like that. I don't like...
I implore you to watch the Stargate fantasy movie. It is very... it's a very plausible concept.
It's from the 90s, so it's relatable.
I know when it was made, and I know how old it is, and I've tried to watch it. It's just...
It's a very plausible premise.
Anyway, that's... Pete, what about you? How do you get down with nerd stuff? I can't imagine the list is not very big or anything.
You can't imagine the list is not. So you can imagine the list is big.
Yes.
That's, you said a double negative. Okay. Yeah, I know. Well, where do I start?
Back off.
My entire library of audiobooks that is filled with, at this point,
there you go,
hundreds of books. It's 95%. filled with space odyssey, sci-fi, futuristic, humans are in the universe or AI or intelligence or whatever. Like, yeah, I'm all over that. If you want to talk audiobooks, nerd out with me, call me up. that's one part of it. The other part of it is I love anything sci-fi, anything that's like spaceships, the future, you know, or any like secret, like discovered whatever alien civilization on Earth or some smart intelligence, or there's something floating in space that we're going to investigate. I'm all over that stuff, all over it. Any kind of movie, and I don't care how bad it is. Like it, and Dan, you know, cause we get lost on TikTok all the time, some like interesting scene from a C-rated movie.
I mean, that's how I've been watching movies on all my streaming services now.
Because and it's like not even a good movie.
I see a clip on TikTok. I'm like, okay, now I gotta watch the whole thing now.
Exactly. Yeah. So I am all for the nerdy stuff. On top of that, I used to be big. Like I used to play video games with buddies of mine and all that stuff. I play a lot of single player colony builders, like Civilization. I have like 400 hours into RimWorld. It's a very niche game.
I know the game.
Do you have a job in that game or?
No, it's just over the last couple of years or year. years.
Would that be a rim job?
A rim job world? Yeah, RimWorld. It's about space, like setting up colonies on a random planet, whatever. Like, I'm so nerdy with this stuff. I've fallen in love with single player games because this is because of woodworking and all this and content creation. As I've gotten busier with all of this, it's given me less freedom to just like hop on with the boys, quote unquote. So I've fallen in love with games that I can hop onto at any time and pick up and play. And there's often an urge of, like, we all have this of like, I can monetize this. Like, why don't I start streaming? Oh, yeah. And it's like, no, you stupid. You're like, it's for you. Like, right? It's for you to relax.
Yeah. I've had people say that to me. Why don't you stream on Twitch when you do? No, like, this is my special time.
Like, I already do 3D printing, CNC, laser content, work a full-time job. I try to have a relationship with my wife, and like I can't also stream on top of that.
And sometimes I'll have an eighth grader just like totally slaughter me, and I don't need the world hearing me cuss and scream and throw my controller.
Yeah, the things we say. But right. I nerd out over single-player games. I'd get canceled in a heartbeat. And listen, like, I'm going to call him out. Ready? Mike Coffey plays Stardew Valley with his kid.
That's a great game.
It's a great game. And it's something he never talked about ever. And we were in California. We were visiting his new house. So we were staying there. And he was playing it with his son. And where I'm like, dude, I love you so much more right now because you're playing Stardew Valley on the iPad with your kid.
It's such a great game.
Didn't he play like, Minecraft as well? They had a little
They're playing Minecraft world. Too. Yeah, like this isn't a shameful thing.
No.
It's just something we like, whether it's...
Oh, he's bonding with his kid. That's awesome.
Patrick, I'm also going to say something to you that, like, I found the people that played Magic the Gathering, Pokemon cards, whatever, like, those... Or Dungeons & Dragons, I was never cool enough. I was in the limbo of, like, athlete and nerd, which, like, I wasn't... cool enough to hang out with either group.
That's how I was in high school.
I never got invited to a Dungeons & Dragons game. I never got invited to Magic the Gathering games. And I like bought decks and I played once or twice, but I never got invited to like be part of the core group. And like, you know what? That's why I'm so inclusive with this whole making thing. Like, I want everyone to do it because I want you to know it's okay.
Yep.
Whatever you're into is okay.
Yeah, both of those.
Weird hobby, you can. I follow people that, like, they talk about their Magic the Gathering or Pokemon cards or whatever, and, like, the way they talk about it is so intriguing that I follow the content.
Yeah, I didn't do any of those things as a high schooler because I was very much in the same boat. I was too cool for the nerds and too nerdy for the cool kids.
Right? So it's so weird.
I got it.
High school.
Yeah, I got into Magic and D&D in like the last 8 years of my life. So in my 30s is when I started doing Magic. And it's just like, I'm old enough that I don't care if people think I'm a really weird nerd guy playing these really weird fringe games. I don't care because I get joy out of them. So,
yeah. It's amazing how that mindset changes as you get older.
I
try to explain this to my kids, especially my daughter now. She's freshman in high school. She's very socially conscious and she's worried about what people think about her. I'm like, man, just I hope I'm around when you're like 35, 40 because
you're not going to care at all.
When you
I can't wait till you
don't care at all.
She's like, I don't understand how you can just do that thing. Like,
yeah,
I'll just yell out the window at people. Like,
yeah,
she's, how do you do that? And not, I'm like, I don't care anymore.
I care so little, I negative care.
Yeah.
How do you wear pajama pants to the store? I don't care.
I don't care.
Oh man, I wear pajama. I wear shorts and flip flops to daycare when it's 30, like negative 30 out, and people are like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "I'm comfortable. I don't care."
Yeah.
Okay.
All you suckers got to go to a job. I'm just gonna go home.
Yeah, I'm gonna go home, drink coffee, and if I feel like working by noon, I'm gonna do it.
Exactly.
The moral of the story is, whatever you're into,
do it.
There's a community for it.
Oh yeah.
Do it. You're gonna find people to rally around you.
What?
Rule 34, yeah.
if there's a thing, there's a community. Is that what Rule 34 is?
If there's a hole, fill it.
does Jake have the last question?
Follow your fart. I think that's it.
All right.
Randy, Malcolm, Freedom, Mitch, Nick, and Kamani. I mean we are
What we have we a should... small, short topic we're going to talk about. I really want to shoehorn this in.
Yeah, we need to Wait, talk.
Before
need...
you get into your thing, can I talk about AI for a little bit?
You son of a bee. Yeah,
I see. Go ahead. I stole it from you. we literally went on a mini rant earlier in a chat together, the three of us, about AI and how there's all these people that are like, oh, okay. Dan posted a bunch of photos. Tell the story.
I've been messing around. In the evenings when I have a little free time, instead of playing GTA, I'll sit on my iPad and mess around with this new AI thing and make little logos for t-shirts designs and stuff. And it's doing okay. I mean, the AI does okay. But I just like having fun and I'm enjoying it. And I'm really not making anything out of it yet. I might open a merch shop sooner or later. But whenever I make those, after I make a couple, I like to post them on my Instagram. And I've posted two times now, and each time I've posted it, I've gotten a comment that goes something like this. I can't believe you're okay with this as an artist. It's taken away from other artists' ability to make money, or something to that effect. Like, just kind of like looking down on AI because it's taken away jobs from other creators. And I just don't understand that mindset. Like, do you think complaining about this is going to make it go away? You think you're going to shame me into stopping? You think you're going to shame other people into stopping? I don't understand
this. This whole mindset makes me want to lose my mind. I have so many opinions on this.
Please share.
So I'll jump right in with the initial.
And I'm not trying to make enemies. I'm just.
No.
I don't understand this mindset. And hopefully I can help change people's views a little bit.
And I don't think you will. Any of us will.
Probably not.
People on the internet have their opinion, no matter how much you show them proof that they're wrong. But this is a topic that nobody's wrong or right in, because it's such an emerging topic. But right off the bat, your whole thing where you're just making these t-shirt ideas for fun, maybe you'll turn them into something.
Maybe.
My argument there is the people who get mad about that, like, it's a non-starter, because had AI not existed, you would have these ideas in your head and you would never do anything. You're not going to go hire a graphic designer to maybe make these ideas that may be making money. It's just not a good investment. So there was never money making potential for these fledgling graphic designers to begin with. And I have friends who are graphic designers who make hundreds of thousands of dollars a year as graphic designers, and they are diving headfirst into this AI thing because it makes them more efficient. It makes them, if they used to be able to take on two commercial clients, they can now take on eight commercial clients because they can throw prompts at AI for ideas and then go, okay, that idea is good. I'm gonna flesh that out myself further, and they don't have to think about the idea. It's just so crazy that people, it's here's a good analogy that I thought about earlier. I look at Lizzie from House of Timber. I look at Adrian, our friend Hickory Homestead. I look at Leslie from Oak and Feather. They're all very, very, very talented scroll saw artists. They are killing it in an age of lasers where I can repeat everything they're doing with the press of a button on my laser, but they still kill it as scroll saw artists because there is a demand for that handmade scroll saw art. Leslie just bought a laser, Oak and Feather, and she's incorporating that into her business because she's smart. She isn't complaining about, oh, the lasers are taking my business. She's pulling it into her business and going, okay, I can take my design and mass produce it as ornaments and still do my high dollar scroll saw art and make more money. So I guess my petty mindset wants to say the people who are complaining about AI aren't seeing that they can use it as a tool. And it's mostly because, one, they had a pretty easy gig doing easy graphic design that now can be done by AI, and they're not willing to adapt their business to incorporate AI into their workflow, or they're just contrarians by nature.
I mean, I feel like this is probably the same argument that has been had time and time again.
And will
whenever there's a new iteration to something. I bet we could find that argument if the internet existed back then when power tools started becoming a thing.
Well, and I think that argument was probably had over barroom, beers in barrooms instead of
or when computers first started getting the first iteration of Photoshop or whatever was used back then, and graphic designers were doing everything on actually pen and paper then.
Yeah. Well, I look back to like 20 years ago when digital started really taking over, and you had print photography purists who were like, that's never going to catch on. And
Now
film photography is very popular, but it's a novelty, and it's a niche. It's a very niche thing.
I mean, just look at Kodak. Kodak didn't want to get on the digital train.
Yeah.
Where are they now?
Yep.
We watched the same TikTok, Dan.
and it comes back around. Like if you could offer wedding photography services as a film only shop right now, and you could probably charge $15,000 a wedding as a niche film photographer doing weddings.
Oh, yeah.
To those high end clients who want this really unique experience. So it all comes back around, and people don't realize that.
Wait, Pete, we haven't let you say a word at all. So
that's fine. You kind of stole my vibe with the power tools thing, but basically this is the whole argument of, well, I could build that if I had the tools too.
Yep.
Yeah. It's just, you know, like reversed.
It's the same exact argument, guys. Like, listen, at first it was like, well, I can work into the night if I have electric power in my house too, instead of a candlelight. And like, and then it was, yeah, well, I could do that if I had a Ford car to move
LTD
goods. And like, and then it was power tools. And even now it's like, well, I could do that if I had cordless tools, but mine are corded, so I need a generator on a job site. Like, it's all these like arguments of, and listen, we talked about this.
We get it that like, it sucks.
Yeah, I get it.
It sucks when something is seemingly being taken away from you.
And
but you need to be willing to adapt.
And that's
there's like a fight or flight sort of like stimulation.
Stigma.
That kind of takes over. Like you see the thing that's bringing you income, and you see that kind of going away because of this other thing. So your instinct is to fight.
That's the thing. You feel like your way of life is being threatened. And here's the thing. Like we've talked about this in the past.
Way better than me.
No, that's the thing. Words. Like, we've all said this in the past of like, sometimes we'll see somebody like really killing it in a field that we're in. Right? Like someone's killing it with CNC cut templates and whatever. And like Dan's like, ah, well, you know, F that guy, I could do that too. But like, I won't now because he's doing it already. Like, and I'm just saying like, oh, I have the laser, but like old designed by Donnie cornered the template market. So I can't make templates anymore. Like it makes you like it, like your first, I always call it a primal reaction. Your primal reaction is always like that guy, you know, like you just get mad. Like that's the primal, like the ink, like the it's not the smart modern man reaction of like, most of us are going to be happy. And most of us are going to think, okay, cool. I see what they're doing. All right. They're using their laser to do this. Well, what if I find something in my own niche to do something with that? Like that's when you start being logical. But if you just get mad at what the next progression is, like there was like a couple of months where I was like, yo, you know what? Bamboo, because they're releasing all these new products and just disrupting the whole industry, whatever. But I'm like, no, I want the newest tech. I want the newest tech. Yeah. And yes, it's a lot of like, I want to quote unquote normies coming into the 3D printing world. Now there's a lot of normies coming into the digital design and writing world. Suddenly Fiverr.com is seeing half the traffic because AI exists. And like, it's the same thing. Like when the steam engine started, guess what? All the cobblers in them, they went out of business.
But new businesses arose.
New businesses arose. It's the thing. When the horse and buggy quit working or quit being a thing,
new businesses arose around the car.
And the majority of these quote unquote graphic designers who are afraid of this probably haven't taken the time to realize that 90% of the generations from AI need 50% of the work. They need work. They don't come looking good.
Yeah.
And
yeah. The five that I posted
were luck.
Was of like 50 that I've tried, and it took me hours and hours.
One, you need to know how to talk dirty to the AI. Two, you need to be willing to take the shit it gives you and turn it into something beautiful, which like, look at the t-shirt I made me and Braden and the guys made for you with the Mayo t-shirt. That is nowhere near the original AI generation we got. I had to manipulate it and it turned out great, but I tried hundreds of generations to get something even close to what I ended up making.
I want to put a pause on a conversation for a second about AI because we're talking about it on like a fairly comfortable level.
Yeah.
To someone that is listening to this podcast, and we're sorry that we kept you going this long when you're like, what do you mean AI? What is whatever? If you go to ChatGPT or a lot of these like Ideagram, is that what it is?
That's the one I've been using. Ideagram.ai. Just put it in your thing called?
Your web browser.
But here's the thing. So you're going to hear a lot of these terms thrown around and we want to educate you. The next couple months, years, whatever, you're going to hear a lot of this. AI is basically just really smart algorithms.
Yeah.
And what you, as the user, can provide it is something called a prompt. You're prompting the answer that they're going to give you. The more information you give it, just think of like you're a boss at a job, the more information you give your employees, the better job they're going to do because they know exactly what parameters to work within. They're going to take some creative freedom. You might love it, hate it, or be somewhere in the middle with what the result is. You can always redefine the parameters afterwards, but the initial prompt is what's going to do most of the work. And that's the word I want to teach you guys. If you're new to this, is prompt. Picture of a hand plane on a table saw. You like picture of a metal hand plane with a wooden handle on a table saw in a average garage with a woodworker in the background performing some work it's this time of day. Like, the more you can give it, or if you're like, I need an Etsy article,
I'll,
or I'm
I'll
sorry,
give
an
you
Etsy
a prompt
listing.
For one of my yes, early please. Iterations here.
The more you give it, the more you're going to get out of it. Yeah, it's just, you can't just.
It's akin to feeding instructions to a 3D printer in G-code. It doesn't know where to go on the grid if you don't tell it where to go on the grid.
Well, just do the thing, right? Like, no, there's more to it. So, Dan, what do you have?
I made this this AI, and I'll show it on camera, of this halibut smoking a joint that says, I do it for the halibut. And you'll notice that you can't – they misspelled halibut, and that's just one of the reasons that AI has shortcomings. But the prompt was – a logo design that says exactly, quote, I do it for the halibut, unquote, with a fish smoking a joint with a blue background with within a circle and in the style of like a tuna can processed on the East Coast.
That's a really good detail.
That's very, very specific.
I mean, and, then, and that's kind of exactly what I got, right?
Yeah, like, you got something pretty close to it.
It just misspelled halibut.
Yeah. So, and that happens a lot. And
but specifics. Yeah. You want specifics.
Yep.
Well, guess what? I'm going to rebuttal that with, you can really f*** up a cut if you run on a table saw wrong, if you don't set your fence right.
Yeah.
Or if you try to freehand that sucker with a circular saw. Well, guess what? It's a tool. And how you handle it and what you apply to it is gonna mean how good the result is at the end of the day.
The bottom line is, don't look at this like it's taking your job. Look at it like, how can I use this to make my job more efficient and better?
Yeah, my advice to specifically solo graphic designers or creatives who are opposed to this, think about the amount of work you can do a week as a solo graphic designer, and that's your sole income. Think about the amount of work you can do a week and think about how implementing this into your workflow can triple or quadruple that, which is more money. If you're leveraging it right, this can actually generate more income for you. If you're willing to come up with prompts to get ideas, and you don't want to take exactly what an AI tool is spitting out and go, this is my work. No, that's not what you do here. You use it as a muse, as a couple idea sets you can present to a client. Be like, do you like something like this? And then you refine it further.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a starting point. It's a base.
Another tool to make your life easier. That's all it is. Stop hating it. Give yourself a few days. Reset your mindset.
It's not going away.
Think of it as a positive thing in your life and stop being afraid of it. Sign up for an OpenAI account for ChatGPT or on one of the other sites.
Oh, there's so many now.
And honestly, here's the thing. There's so many good resources with all these AI sites. There's literally AI sites that provide support for people to talk if they're going through stuff, if they have PTSD, if they're really sad.
Oh, yeah, that's another good thing about those.
Listen, talking to a therapist is expensive. And there's websites that literally provide, like, not face-to-face, but a chat conversation. And with some of these higher-end
language
systems,
models.
There's actual language models where it talks back to you. And you can have a conversation with, an artificial intelligence. Granted, it's not like the AI of the movies or the books. But
which might not even be possible. It's still on the
fence.
That's
the thing.
Yeah.
But it's enough to, like, listen, it might literally give you better advice than your buddy going, whoa, that's crazy, man.
You thought about getting outside, maybe going for a run?
You want to smoke a blunt? Like, or something like...
You went a totally different direction.
Well, whatever it might be, you know, this is a tool. This is going to help a lot of people. It's changing things, guys. But think of that, like when Siri came out on your phone or Google Assistant or Alexa. We're all like, whoa, the future is here. That was nothing.
Child's play.
Child's play. What, in 10 years... We're going to think things and they're going to happen.
And
not really, but like,
and it would be one thing if this is something that could be avoided or steered away, but it's like Dan said, it's happening whether anybody likes it or not. So you better embrace it and find a way to capitalize on it. You better find a way to capitalize it on it and make it work for you, or you're going to get left behind.
Yeah. You're going to be the Kodak.
I was uncomfortable with it in the beginning, but I'm like, you know what? This ain't going anywhere, so I'm going to find a way to make it make my business better, and it's helped.
I've seen like news reports or something, probably TikTok, talk about how AI is going to make the most millionaires over the next
decade.
Absolutely.
I mean, just because people are going to
lean
into it and utilize it and figure out how to make it work for them. So,
and again, like I said, back to the core of it. Yeah, you think about the prompt. Baby. So like the prompt being, hey, Dan, write me an outro for a popular woodworking podcast with a large Patreon following that is looking for more supporters, that has no guests next week, but is very happy to have had Patrick Gensel from @PatrickGensel on Instagram, and make it in a upbeat and quick format.
Yeah, I can do that for you.
That's a prompt right there.
Let's see.
I see what you did there. I like it.
Hey, we want to give a huge shout out to all of our patrons. You keep the lights on. We appreciate you guys. If you want to join the patron community, the Matt Army, go over to patreon.com/anotherwoodshoppodcast. Thank you to each and every one of you who support us. If you want to support us non-financially, you can always just share the show. You could share it in your stories, share it in a post, tell your neighbor, tell your grandma, tell your Aunt Susie that you hadn't seen in a decade. Call her up. Talk to her. See what she's up to.
Tell your AI.
Tell her your AI and that you got a great new podcast you should listen to. Also, huge thanks to Patrick for being here. We really appreciate you, brother.
Thanks, man.
I'm glad you guys had me. This is a really cool conversation, something I'm very interested in. And
yeah. I
hope it changes. I hope it at least opens some people's eyes to the way it, as a creative, it might be able to make things better for them.
Yeah.
Right on.
Go play with AI. Let us know what you think.
Yeah.
Or if you hate AI and you think it's taking over the world, let us know too. Because, yeah. You know,
I think right now that's all space fantasy, but maybe it's possible down the road.
I think it's just Bill Gates putting a chip in my head. Not sure.
Yeah.
More chips, Phil. I want more
or
chips.
Tim Apple. I don't know.
Tim Apple. That Tim Apple guy.
Anyway, thanks everybody for listening. We appreciate y'all.
Love you. Bye. Even a Dunlap can do it.